Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spech.
Hello.
What's happening, Derek?
Not much, man. Not much. I'm waiting for the snow to come.
I'm waiting patiently. Still got another half month left.
I was going to set up my winter tent, my hot tent, but then it rained on the weekend, and I need snow so I can set it up and test it out in the backyard, and so I haven't used it yet.
But see, when you set it up in the snow, then you got to hang it to dry.
Yeah.
So you want to.
That's why I didn't want to do it in the rain.
Yeah.
So I need to see if all four of us will fit in it. I don't think we will. It's too small.
Well, then one of the kids has to sleep outside.
Exactly.
Find yourself a good tree to sleep under, because you're not in here tonight.
I'll pile snow on you to keep you warm.
Yeah. See? Awesome. Yeah, no, we got to set ours up and just give it a good looky-loo.
To make sure that it's functional.
Yeah. And, yeah, we'd like to do that when it's warmish and dry.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been doing yard work lately, cutting down
more trees
that are leaning over on our side our neighbors. Yeah. So we got, it's quite open out there now.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot, and they are like leaning pretty. If there's a good wind, ice, whatever, storm, and they come down, they're taking a lot of fence and stuff with it.
So, okay.
But there, it was got stretched out so far that it would have taken some of our eaves troughing and and chunk of our garage as well. So now that all that's gone. And we got tons and tons of bags of leaves for the leaf pickup this week. Woohoo! But yeah, we got to get our winter gear checked out still. Oh, just busy. Speaking of winter, before we get into anything else here, did you see that Fjallraven polar thing?
I heard about it.
300 kilometers of Arctic wilderness, 180 skilled sled dogs, a handful of experts, a small group of people just like you, and a journey you'll never forget. It's called Fjallraven Polar. So this is something you can apply for. And unfortunately found out kind of late because everything's due by this Sunday.
Well, I only heard about it today when you mentioned it to me, but it's like I would have applied to that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the stuff.
Well, there's still time.
Nah, not to make a really good
presentation. It doesn't have to be good. You just got to make, there's like three challenges. If you go to Fjallraven.com and under their experiences, there's this Fjallraven Polar. And there's, you have to do a letter to Fjallraven. Basically, they say it's like a minute max video post on your Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's something about a piece of gear. What piece of gear do you have that you really like and you would buy again? Or is it is something that's this piece of gear special to you? Why? And you got to do a little thing on that. Then there another one is your connection to nature. So you got to do something else out in nature.
Hmm.
So, I mean, you can do that all on a Saturday, put it together, throw it on there along with your thing in. It's due, everything's due by Sunday.
It'd be a hoot to do the video sitting on a Thunderbox or something.
There you go. So you do that, and if then they, by December 9th, they select the people that are going, and they take care of your travel, your gear, your planning, everything.
Yeah.
You set out for...
You don't even need experience.
No.
They teach you everything. So that part of it is... So I'm a little confused about their business model. So it must be... They must be chalking it up to advertising.
I would think so.
And so.
I'm not concerned about that. In April 2025, Fjallraven Polar once again will bring together 20 people from across the globe for a 300-kilometer dog sledding expedition across Arctic Scandinavia. Fjallraven is inviting anyone curious enough to apply for a place on the team. If you're in a spot, you'll learn to drive your own dog sled through vast frozen landscapes, experiencing a world completely different from your own. You'll also learn essential survival skills and adapt to life in the Arctic, where temperatures can drop to minus 35. Oh, whoop-de-doo. We believe anyone can become an Arctic explorer. This once-in-a-lifetime adventure proves it.
That's amazing.
Right?
I wish I'd known about it sooner.
And basically, you're traveling across Sweden.
Yeah. My dogs are, so
your team of six dogs.
So how many dogs in total again?
180.
That's 180. That's a lot
that's
of dog
a
poop.
A lot of poop. Yeah, what they don't tell you is the back two sleds are the dog poop buckets.
They're the scoopers.
Yeah, you'll meet your team of six dogs whom you look after and work with for the duration of the journey.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so they teach you how to work your dog, yep. How to string up the dogs and all that.
Care
on the
leads, for the dogs.
Care for them, feed them, all that. Because they're your dog sled for the entire week or whatever it is that you're going. Spend several nights sleeping in a tent or under the open sky. You'll learn how to manage your dog, set up winter camp, cook outdoors, adapt to constantly changing winter conditions, which can be harsh and unforgiving. And you'll have the support from experienced Fjällräven team of professional mushers who will provide guidance. But you'll do most of the work yourself.
That's amazing.
So there still is, realistically, if you get right on it.
Yeah.
There is still time
less
to
than
apply.
A week.
But how do you go into... So, yeah, I need a couple weeks off. Why? Well, I put in this little thing last year. Back November on a whim, I put in this application to go dog sledding across the Arctic. And, looky-loo who got chosen.
I'm going to go dog sledding in the Scandinavian country.
But you know what? I should do it because if we're hoping to get to Texas... And then paddling out in Japan, and then I'll just throw in a dog sled thing across the Arctic, up in Sweden.
All in one year.
All in one year. What a great year it will be for me.
It would be darn cool.
Come back to no job. That'd be awesome, though.
Yes, it would. Holy
just
cow.
Like, yeah, go to Fjällräven, fjallraven.com. And check it out. Like, I mean, there's videos there and everything, and that would really be something. That would definitely be an adventure.
Wow, would it ever?
Right. Whew. So where are you going this week? Well, this week I'm going to Sweden. Where are you going? 7-Eleven. Going nowhere. I'm going home. I'm going to the mall.
I'm gonna circle the block.
Yeah, I'm gonna circle the block. Get attacked by the neighbor's dog. I think it would just be cool running your own dog team.
Me and Siobhan did that once. It was, we booked some, it was like just a 6-hour, 5-hour dog sled thing in Quebec.
Yeah.
And so we met up with the dude out in the middle of nowhere in Quebec. And
that
so,
doesn't have serial killer vibes all over it.
I know. But what was neat is that it was just him. And two sleds and all his dogs. And he said, so we can do this two ways. He said, you can run your own sled or I can put both of you on my sled. I said, well, I'll run my own team.
Right.
So I ran a team. He showed me very briefly, like it was like 15, 20 minutes of instruction.
Well, there's ones that go through Algonquin and up in Halliburton and stuff where that's exactly what you do.
Yeah.
Because Trace and I were looking at it 1 year, but then we're like, you don't get snow and like you're looking at things. Yeah. This has been canceled cause there's no snow or not enough snow or whatever. Right. But so like Tracy would be sitting on the sled and then I get to run that sled.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, like five or six different sleds with people and you go to a certain spot and they got hot chocolate and
that's
lunch,
what we did. We went to this hut
and then you go back.
We had this hut and we had tea and hot chocolate and a biscuit and whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was a couple hours. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I ran my own team.
Could you imagine doing that, though, for like a good week and some?
Oh, I know. That'd be amazing.
Well, one day the video talks about the guy says, yeah, today's going to be a 50-kilometer day.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And what did he say? They were Alaskan Huskies, not Siberian.
Some of the pictures, some of the dogs just look normal dogs.
Yeah. Well, so what did they say? They not picky on the dogs as long as they can do the running and they're good enough in the snow and the cold, then so be it, right?
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Oh, whatever.
So go check it out, and if you're going to apply, then if you get chosen, definitely let us know.
Let us know.
We want to know. So I might actually look more into this tomorrow at work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll use my work time.
Yeah, why? Yeah. Don't waste your own time, your home time.
Right? So somebody at work was getting ready to leave the other day for home. And then they went back, put their stuff in their office, then went and used the bathroom. You're supposed to poop on company time.
Yeah.
Should have done that earlier in the day.
Don't do it
when you're leaving. Poop on company time, people. I work with some people that just don't get it. Okay, well, we got a few things to talk about. We're going to start out with our buddy, Kevin Callan. He doesn't know we're talking about him today. So when you get these lists, they say top 10, top 5, exactly. Whatever, you go, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Well, of gear and stuff or places to go. You go, well, I'd go to there or I'd buy that piece. Kevin's he just wrote a article for Explorer magazine, which he's always got his blog posts on Explorer. Yep. So explore-mag.com.
Yeah. So he has the last article in the mag every time it runs. Yeah. And plus he does the online stories as well.
So he put my top most useful gear picks of 2024 for canoeists. He went on 48 canoe trips this year.
That's amazing.
I was on one of those canoe trips with him.
Mm-hmm.
He tested and reviewed a lot of new pieces of camp gear, and here are the top 5 that he's definitely planning to repack for the next paddling season. Recreational Barrel Works Red Barrels. They're known for their blue barrels. They're 60 and 30 liters.
Yeah.
Used by countless canoeists to keep their gear dry, food sealed. In 2024, they came out with a red-colored barrel. Now, you've got a green one, which we're thinking may have been an olive barrel at one point.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it was.
I've got a yellow Eureka one,
mm-hmm.
But every other one I've ever seen is blue.
Yeah, yeah.
So they decided, and I thought, well, because you can see red. That's why I like my yellow one, because you're going to see this bright yellow barrel, where blue's kind of darker, might blend into the shadows.
Yeah.
And red.
It's more of a mud brown.
Hey?
It's not so much red.
No, it's red.
It's a deeper red. It's not a bright fire engine red.
Are you on drugs, boy?
I was thinking certain times of year, like fall colors and stuff.
No,
it's like,
that's like a bright cherry red.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right here.
I looked at it online.
I'm looking at it right here. It's like the same color as the YouTube play button.
Okay, yeah. Is it?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at it because the YouTube play button's right over top of it on the video.
Well, I'm looking at the back of your screen.
Oh. Does it look good? It's silver. Anyway, so red, because I'm thinking, like, a lot of life jackets are red or yellow.
Yep.
Perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin says, I remembered reading an article on how Australian sheep farmers place blue barrels out in the fields to attract the nuisance bush fly. It seems the insect is attracted to dark colors such as blue. The blue barrel acts as some sort of fly pie. So I brought my new red 60-liter barrel and my old 30-liter blue barrel on a trip with me to Quebec's Kipwa Lake. The flies visit our camp, and they preferred hanging out around the blue barrel more than the red. My new red 60-liter barrel became my new best friend.
Huh.
See? Science! It's all about the science!
I don't think that's why he got the red barrels. I think it just happened to be. Do you think he picked them because of the bugs? Or just coincidence?
No, Kevin Callan's really, really, really intelligent. He knows this sort of stuff, and he probably didn't mean to do it, but did it because deep down he knew what he was doing.
No, it's Andy that got the red barrels.
Well, Andy did them, yeah, because he wanted something different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Kevin that bought one.
I see. It is a bright red. Look at that.
See? Mud brown.
It's, you know, when I clicked the link for the article, it looked different to me.
Because you were looking at with one eye closed and the other one not open.
Yeah, the 30 liters are $70.
60 liter is $99.95 Canadian.
Hmm.
So $100 for, I think my Eureka back in the day was like $125.
Hmm. Look at
that. So go to Recreational Barrel Works and you can check out all their stuff, all these barrels. The other second piece, which I also would like to try, Slack Seat. Now, when we put Slack Seat into Amazon before checking, clicking on the link and going to the actual thing,
yeah.
You got yoga pants.
Yeah,
and I got this robotic thing that straps to your legs and butt.
Chair
and
pants.
It's a seat, chair pants, that you can click down and it's an automatic chair.
Wait a second.
You're wearing a chair everywhere. So Slack Seat is neither of those. If you wear that chair pants in a pair of yoga pants,
mm-hmm.
would that be a double Slack Seat?
Yeah, exactly.
Inventor and canoeist Cole Bennett asked Kevin to try out his latest product, the Slack Seat. It's a kneeling thwart alternative for solo canoeists. When you paddle a solo canoe, your best option is to kneel in the center of the boat, keeping low to the water and at the proper pivot point. You're more stable there and more in control of the canoe. The problem is your knees really start to hurt, your legs go numb, your ankles get crushed. And how? Traditionally, he's used a square box, camera box, and stuffed a dry bag or even an enlarged Nerf football to help relieve the pressure off my lower body. All work, but none of them portage well. Yes. Cole claims the Slack Seat works like a hammock for the high knee. And it does. When you sit on it, your legs tuck nicely underneath with no pressure placed on them. It's also adjustable, allowing you to alter the height and lean more to one side, which is the proper way to solo paddle a canoe. Big bonus is that it stays strapped to your canoe, so no issues with the portages, and there's no need to permanently attach a center seat. So this thing's basically like a little, I'd say a half hammock.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So you got two straps that go up on the gunnels.
Yeah.
And then there's half a thick, wide canvas.
Yeah.
Piece of canvas that you sit your butt on.
And then there's an adjustment toggle.
Yeah. That you can tighten it so you can get higher, lower,
yeah.
That sort of deal. See, right now what I do is I'm back farther, so I rest my butt on the edge of my, well, because I do it backwards, right? I'm sitting in the bow seat.
Yeah.
So I have my butt resting on the edge of that.
Mm-hmm.
But my big thing with that is, with my flippers stuck underneath there, if I were to ever flip,
you'd be trapped.
I might. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've never done it. Knock on wood.
Yeah.
And that's always been my thing. With this thing here, so in the videos you watch on the Slack Seat website, he's got his, like, he's right up against
the yoke. Yeah.
I'm never that close.
Because
my thing watching that
mm-hmm.
is, well, you got your knees coming up under the yoke, and then you got that seat now.
Yes. It's even tighter.
Right?
So, depending on what I wear on my feet, so shoulder season, like when I went out with the boys recently, I had rubber boots on because it was raining. And so, if I have just water shoes or water slippers on, I will kneel in the center of the canoe
mm-hmm.
and so I'll prop up a small day pack or something under my butt so that I'm off my ankles. But I'll just tilt it over and it's easier and more efficient to paddle. But
right.
with the big clodhoppers on that I had the other weekend, it was I had to sit on the seat because I have these giant rubber boots.
And they don't bend.
They don't bend at all.
No.
Yeah.
No. So when you're trying to put your feet flat backwards sort of thing, mm-hmm. that's not happening.
So this thing would be neat because it would help elevate you in the center of the canoe. It's a really good idea. I like it.
Yeah. I would really like to get one. Unfortunately, it's that price point.
It's a little pricey.
$140 plus $20 delivery.
And then there'd be taxes on top.
And taxes.
And I didn't go to see the final price because the first step is put in your email address. And it's like, I don't want them to have my email address.
Because they got you now.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this is a really cool thing. I think he's going to sell a lot of these. Like I say, with me, it's just, I'll keep going the way I am.
Yeah.
It's
very tempting.
I'd spend $100 on it.
Yeah.
$140. Yes. In my opinion, but $140 is a bit too.
Well, it ends up being almost $200 with taxes and shipping.
Yeah. And, yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be about $200.
Yeah, I'll just keep going the way I'm going. But
what I liked about it is not just the solo aspect, but when we go camping with the kids, we always have to rent a three-man canoe.
Three-seater, yeah.
And so this here is a way to have a two-seater, and you can have a portable seat that goes in the middle for the kids.
Right?
Hmm.
Well, one kid anyway.
Yes, one kid. So on a three-seater canoe, they sit side by side, but they couldn't put two kids on this seat.
See, you needed to have one less kid, because now one kid's got to stand, and the other kid, and that same kid has to sleep outside in the winter. So which of your kids do you hate?
We have threatened them with, if you guys don't stop bickering, I'm going to drag you behind the canoe.
Oh, the glory days.
Then they don't
days.
Need a seat.
The glory days. Remember Dad used to drag us behind the canoe? Oh, damn, we're the days.
But it is a neat tool.
It really is. I saw that and I'm thinking, hey, that is really
like I was
cool.
ready to go buy one immediately.
Yeah.
And then saw how much it was going to cost. And it's like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, they're new too. So maybe in a couple of years, once he gets things going, the price might come down some too, right? So
prices never come down.
Definitely keep our eyeballs on it. So the red barrel I'd definitely get if I needed a new barrel.
Yeah.
The slack seat I would definitely get. Third piece is the Portage Pell. I've seen this around for a couple of years now, and I think I'm going to pick one of these up for when Tracy and I go on our canoe trips.
So I've seen I've done it myself where I've made something like this myself. Mm-hmm. Describe it and
So the owner of Portage Pell, Josh Vermast, caught a glimpse of a picture of Kevin's canoe buddy Ashley on an Algonquin Portage.
He's Speedo Man.
He had several fishing rods tangled up in one hand and extra paddles tucked and grasped loosely in the other. Common scene for any paddler. I've done it many times myself.
Yep.
Josh immediately mailed me his new product to help poor Ashley out on the next trip. And it did. The invention is amazing. The Portage Pell works by having two elastic hooks and loop straps attached to a ribbed handle. You are able to transport paddles and fishing rods in a compact and organized manner. So basically it's two Velcro strips and a handle. And you wrap the Velcro strips around your paddles. And then it's like you just carry them with the hand. It's like having a long suitcase.
Yes.
Except, your paddles are sticking out, and you can throw your fishing rod in there as well. And it's just this bundle with a handle.
Mm-hmm.
$30. That's perfect.
Yeah. And I now strap everything into the canoe for portages. So the canoe, the paddles and everything are strapped in and the fishing rods are strapped in just because I've broken too many fishing rods on portages and it's like, so I leave them in the canoe, but this here would be handy because you could strap everything together and Bob's your uncle, because invariably on one of the trips, your hands are free.
Yeah.
So you can just carry the paddles, and it would make the portage in the canoe lighter because you don't have, two fishing rods and three paddles all strapped in there.
And that's my big thing is, and if you're strapping your paddles in, if you got a whole bunch of portages in a row, like small lakes, portage, small lake, you're in, out.
Yeah.
Putting those in and strapping them into the canoe constantly.
Yeah.
That becomes tiring. So something like this is, okay, well, just two quick straps and everything's together.
Yeah.
Right? Again, Portage Pal. Check that one out. We're going to go over the fourth one because it was in his list. The men's Hyperport H2 sandal. He's got like yellow ones. He called them bumblebee ones.
Yeah.
Keen Hyperport H2 sandals comfort is unbelievable, he says. They are water repellent with spacious room across the forefoot for your toes to spread out and have a lace lock bungee system as well as an anti-odor control. I'm kind of skeptical when I see stuff like that you're walking through lakes and mud and everything else claiming to be able to keep the odor out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm kind of skeptical when it comes to things like that, but they say it's got an anti-odor control.
Yeah, they say, it's got silver or something in it, and
It's the arch support, the maximal cushioning, and extra thick midsole that he loves. Plus, the extra traction they provide is incredible. And that's huge when you're on rocks and stuff by the shore, having that extra traction bottom of your footwear. Bonnet is, they only had bright yellow left to order. Sounds weird, but it's the best color. I'll never lose them around camp. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever lost a pair of shoes around camp. However, we're all getting older. So, yeah, I started my paddling career in a pair of sneakers. I don't care if they got wet or dry or anything.
Yeah.
Then I went into a pair of Keens, and they were the open-sided and everything Keens, so stuff got into them. And then I went to my Salomons, which I've had for a number of years, which finally died this year. They've seen their last trip. But, these Keens, he's been raving about them all summer.
Yes, yeah.
He's had them. So,
yeah.
Men's Hyperport H2 sandals, and I sell you them for $140. It's not a bad price.
I'm trying to find that article.
Which article?
The Kevin Callan one.
Explore magazine.
I know.
Just Google Explore Kevin Callan.
I just did that.
It should be there.
There, I found it.
See?
So I want to see these sandals or whatever.
The last thing, which again is something I've been looking at for this year, I was looking to get this year, but I never did, but I think we'll definitely get one for next year. Recreational Barrel Works again, the Core 2-Part Canoe Pack of the Heritage Series. He says, I learned from Recreational Barrel Works that having a rectangular pack stacked on top of another 52 liters each, and you got to remember the barrels, blue barrels there, are 60.
Yeah.
So 52 liters each would work perfectly while paddling my solo canoe. One tucked away in the bow and the other stored behind me in the stern. They would balance the canoe out nicely and I would simply buckle them together for the portages using the Tump and modular shoulder straps to handle the load. Because you got these two rectangular packs.
Yeah.
And one fits on top of the other, and you can strap the two of them together
mm-hmm.
and then throw them on your back like a backpack.
Yeah, like a canoe pack.
Yeah. It says, on my solo trips, I would have one pack store my food and kitchen kit, and the other would store the rest of my gear, which is perfect. When they went a far northern canoe trip to Opiskaya Park, he used the same pack system. He used the Core 2 pretty much all season, and I haven't put away in storage yet. I figure the two packs unattached would fit superbly on my freight toboggan while winter camping. Double duty, you gotta love that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so the two are, you can, like I say, you portage them together as one pack.
Yeah.
Store them separately in your boat to even out the weight, unless you're, you know, you're heavy packing one of them. As you know, your food and your gear and everything. But yeah, so you can put them side by side or at different parts. And then if you do the winter camping, yeah, they just store right on your nice perfect size for your toboggan. So there's all your gear right there. You can buy one for $120 Canadian, or you can buy the two of them as the two part for $255.
Yeah. It's a nice system.
Mm-hmm. So again, that's at Recreational Barrel Works. Andy's got a lot of cool stuff there.
He does, eh? He's done it well.
That's like the map case. Yes. Love the map case. So out of the five things that Kevin's talked about, I would definitely get four of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Same. Yeah.
There's four of them I really like, so. Explore-mag.com or just Google Explore Kevin Callan.
There you go.
I'm sure Kevin loves to be explored. And I know he's going to be listening to this too. Thanks for that article, Kevin. Really appreciate it. And yeah, like there's some pretty good gear there. Yeah, I'm definitely going to get those. I'm going to contact Andy and get that two-parter.
Yeah.
And the Portage Pell. Oh, it's going to be a rich, expensive Christmas. What'd you get for Christmas? Well, I got everything Andy sells on the website.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna have to. What I like about them is the idea that they'll go on your toboggan for winter camping, because I currently don't have a proper, like, there's a lot of these for winter camping for the sleds. They have these multi pack kit things you can get that go on, and so you can store all your stuff and it straps down to your sled. But it's I've gone to their website. You know, who was it? I can't remember who makes the sleds.
Whiskey Jack.
Whiskey Jack. So their sled packs are very expensive.
Yeah,
like hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And it's like, oh, I don't know if I
handmade my sled
out
of a kid's sled. One of those plastic ones.
Yeah, I've got a couple like
PVC
that.
Piping to, and an old World War II army belt.
Yes.
I just hooked it all up to there with some beaners crossed them, and it works perfectly.
Mine's similar.
You just got to not pile it very high.
Yes.
Because when you go around a corner.
And they tip over.
Yeah. They don't have any kind of nice balancing system.
And you say gosh darn it a lot.
Right. Yeah. Gosh darn gee willikers. And words like that. Yeah. Just to show you how far things have come
in regards to
accessibility.
Ah, yes.
Charging elephants and canoeing through hippo-filled waters were just two of the dangers overcome by Scottish paraplegic Michelle Moffat on an epic African challenge. And just as a total side note, I always thought it was paraplegic.
Huh?
P-A-R-A-P-A-L.
Paraplegic.
Paraplegic. There is no third A in there.
What did you thought it was?
Paraplegic.
Oh, it is paraplegic.
Para-pa.
Oh, yeah.
There's
pa.
Yeah.
Paraplegic.
Yeah. I don't know why. I've always thought it was that, and I'm just reading this article, I'm thinking, wait a minute. And then, no, it wasn't a spelling mistake. It's just a Sean mistake. Michelle and two other wheelchair adventurers have just become the first paraplegics to canoe nearly 300 kilometers down the Zambezi River in just 7 days.
Huh.
That would not have been possible, like, even a decade ago.
How do they do it? I haven't read this article.
The trio spent up to 7 hours a day in canoes in 40 degrees Celsius, 104 degree Fahrenheit heat, facing everything from hippos and crocodiles to punctured boats and pressure sores. They carried wheelchairs, equipment, tents, and medical supplies in their canoes on the expedition, camping by the river each night with the support crew. It was such an incredible experience, which I will never forget, said the mom of four. A couple of years ago, I was thinking about ending my own life. So to be able to do this, to help others, and to give something back is just mind-blowing. My mindset has completely changed, and I hope I'm showing my kids that no matter what challenges you face in life, you do your best and anything is possible.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, just the heat alone would suck, but they had to do it and deal with the fact that they're paraplegic.
Yeah. Former critical care nurse Michelle Moffat's life changed in an instant when she bent down to pick up a pen on a night shift at Glasgow's Golden Jubilee Hospital in 2019. Prolapsed disc had gone into her spinal cord.
Oh.
Post-surgery complications then caused a bleed on her spine, leaving her paralyzed from the waist down.
Wow. Picking up a pen.
Right? It's amazing. Like, I turned to pass somebody a beer and I tweaked my back. And, you know, you're walking like an old guy for like 2 weeks, right? You had the, what's that nerve down?
Sciatic,
yeah. Just turning and passing something to somebody. And you're just like, you don't realize how fast something can happen, how easy it is.
What have I done?
Yeah. Michelle was joined on the expedition by fellow paraplegics Sean Gash from Lancashire and Liam Morris from Cumbria. The trio, who have applied for the Guinness World Record, are raising money for the charity Spinal Research and Whiz Kids, and also donated equipment to a local orphanage school and mission hospital in Zambia.
Hmm.
There's a lot going on with these people.
Yes.
Michelle added, there were some incredible and really scary moments. Liam's canoe capsized on the first day in a stretch of river where there were hippos and crocodiles, which was terrifying. An elephant also charged, which had us all moving away very quick. But we also had some amazing close-up experiences with elephants and camped every night by the river, serenaded by sounds of so many animals. The thing I will really take away, though, is the amazing bond our group formed and the brilliant people we met, who are so grateful for what they have, even though they have so little. You know, that's the one thing they say is, you know, like, oh, third world problem or first world problems. Like, we have so much. And you look at these countries that, you know, they get by with what they have, right? It's really the gluttony thing. Spinal Research is the UK's leading charity funding medical research to develop and deliver effective new treatments. Chief Executive Louisa McGinn said, we are just blown away by what Michelle, Sean, and Liam have achieved. It is truly inspirational. Today, for the first time, we are touching distance of function, restoring treatments for people paralyzed after spinal cord injury, and so every single donation brings our vision of curing paralysis a step closer. WizKids is the UK's leading charity for young wheelchair users. A spokesperson said, Sean, Michelle, Liam, and their team's incredible journey down the Zambezi is a true testament to the power of determination. By taking on this challenge, they have not only raised vital funds, but also awareness, helping to provide life-changing mobility equipment to young people across the UK. Like I said, even, I would say 10 years ago, something like this,
it would be impossible.
It wouldn't be thought of. It wouldn't be done. The accessibility in the paddling world over the last decade has come so far. I mean, we look at the docks now. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Where people can go and launch canoes, kayaks, and all that.
Special
and
docks. Yeah.
Yeah. The like, there's so much. We've talked about the paddles for people that have problems paddling that are connected and and everything. So
and it's not just that things are becoming more accessible. People are becoming more aware of what is available to them to get out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of people are realizing that their limitations aren't as limiting as we used to think.
Yeah. Yeah. So something like this, you see something like this, that's pretty cool.
It's inspiring.
And it's got to be such a boost to them to be able to go out and do something thinking, like I say, she thought, like a couple of years ago, she was looking at ending her own life.
Yeah, exactly.
And now she's been down the Zambezi River in a canoe doing this grand adventure.
She's inspiring others to...
Yeah. Look beyond your walls.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You're more than just a wheelchair sort of thing.
I'm looking at the pictures now. It's interesting looking canoes they're in.
Yeah. Well, and they had to carry extra gear too, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
and
they got their wheelchairs in there and everything. That's a lot of... I hope there was no portaging. Because that would have been horrible.
Yeah. These canoes do not look like...
good on them. Good on them.
That's impressive. That's amazing.
It is.
Inspiring. It's very inspiring.
It really is. So let's go on to another inspiring thing. This one's a bit sciencey.
Okay. I haven't pre-read these articles for tonight's
episode. Environmental
friendly.
I got
very lazy.
You've just been a lazy boy today.
Yes.
Speaking of lazy, Athena's behind you having naps.
Oh, you woke her up.
Yeah, you hear
you
the
said
tale
her name.
Now. Yeah. Most polyester products live a single glorious life as a moisture-wicking shirt, hard-wearing day pack, butt-flattering leggings, before likely making their way to the garbage. There is some recycled polyester, but according to the nonprofit Textile Exchange, 98% of it is produced in the world last year did not come from discarded clothes.
Hmm.
Former Under Armour CEO Patrick Frisk said he realized this reality was not sustainable when he was trying to increase the amount of recycled material in clothes across the brand's product line. It was a race to be as recycled as possible without fully understanding the impact of where this whole thing was going, he says. Collecting bottles to produce more polyester fabric was not sustainable in the long term. I was pretty naive. So that's, we've talked about that before. People are gathering plastics and rubbers and stuff and recycling them into different products. And the amount of processing that has to be done when you start collecting all this stuff.
Yeah.
When you're looking at bottles, like these plastic bottles, and that's a lot of processing.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, definitely not sustainable in long term. Frisk is now CEO of Reju, a textile regeneration company owned by French engineering company Technip Industries. October 3rd of this year, Reju announced the opening of its first factory in Frankfurt, Germany, where it plans to produce branded recycled polyester from textile waste that would otherwise be buried, burnt, or dumped.
Huh.
And we've seen pictures of these textile manufacturers who just, it's all garbage. They're just dumping it and dumping it and dumping it. At the end of last month, Reju announced a three-way partnership between itself, nonprofit thrift store chain Goodwill, and waste management company WM that will funnel discarded polyester textiles to a future Reju factory based in the U.S.
It's going to be in the U.S.
WM, is that not...
Waste management?
Is that waste... I keep thinking Miller Waste, which is a local one for us. But there's a good Goodwill stores all around here.
Yep.
Frisk says he expects construction on the facility in 2027, fully operational by 2028. So he hopes Reju will eventually intercept as much of the 92 million tons of textile waste produced each year as possible before it reaches the garbage. 92 million tons. I mean, 92 tons is huge.
Yeah.
But then you got to throw a million in there. 92 million tons of textile wastes.
We waste so much.
Yeah. This will be made easier in Europe starting next year when the new rule requires EU member states to establish separate collection systems for used textiles.
Well.
I remember when I moved from Scarborough out to Durham.
Mm-hmm.
Scarborough, we had our blue bin, our green bin, and our gray bin. So the blue bin is like your your green bin was the composting stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So your apple cores and egg shells and blah, 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 food waste. The blue bin was for like cans and plastics and bottles and glass and stuff like that. The gray bins was all paper.
Okay.
So newspapers and cardboard and all that. And you had to separate that to put out at your curb. You couldn't put your cardboard and paper in with the blue box with the glass and all that, which was cool.
Yeah.
When we came out here to Durham, we continued doing it because it was habit at that point. And then I'm sitting there one morning going into work late, and the garbage guys come by. They grab my blue bin, throw it in. They grab my gray bin, throw it in. What are you guys doing? You're mixing it all together. Yeah, we don't do that out here.
Hmm.
Why not?
Yeah.
Like, it would make it so much easier at the sorting plant, right?
Yeah.
They don't do it out here. So I think they, you know, like part of the problem is you got to be getting these separation things to help.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, the EU having a separate collection system for used textile. Even still, actually turning discarded textiles into Reju polyester requires a significant different process than producing conventional virgin polyester from petroleum. When you use raw materials like textile waste, the challenge is that it comes in many forms. In theory, the easiest project for a product for Reju to claim is 100% white polyester shirt. So if you're going to get something that you're not going to wear for very long, make sure it's white polyester.
Yeah.
100% white polyester. Unfortunately, post-consumer textile waste is a mixture of everything. When you start to aggregate textile waste, one of the issues you have is time. You have stuff that's 40 years old, 20 years old. We've gotten better about what we're putting into textiles, but the reality is back in the day, things were very nasty.
Oh, yeah.
Company has developed machines that employ optically and infrared technologies to sort out fabrics made from pure polyester it can reclaim from those made in part from cotton or other materials. So it knows what's
it can,
what's
yeah, what. It can sort.
Once everything is sorted, the company removes what Frisk refers to as disruptors, like zippers and buttons.
Yeah.
Then the material is shredded, removed any of the dyes, depolymerized, and reconstituted. Frisk has not confirmed if any companies have signed on to use the fabric. He said there are conversations happening, but he wanted to first make it clear to the public that the company had built out its manufacturing capabilities and supply chain. But he noted part of Reju's appeal will be its capacity to improve on the capabilities of the virgin materials it recycles. According to Frisk, Reju will be able to employ the lessons learned by its parent company to produce better polyester than the other commodity manufacturers. We take out all the PFAs and other impurities, he says. We can create yarns that can be put into fabrics that can be better wicking, softer, more durable, and there's a lot we can do.
Hmm.
So not only are they recycling it,
yeah,
but they're making it better. So
for the future.
For the future.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. Gotta like when that happens.
It's nice when, like, it's a niche market sort of right now. It is. We're trying to figure out better ways to recycle stuff. And we do have to come to some sort of conclusion to do this better.
Yeah.
There's too much plastics that go into the waste stream, and it's just, there's got to be better. So there's the recycle symbol that you find on material, and like you look at the numbers on the backs, and it tells you which ones are what sort of recyclable they are.
Yeah.
And so we looked into it, and like any, like the black plastic takeout containers.
Yep.
They're not recyclable.
Right. There's a lot of stuff that goes in the garbage, mm-hmm, that like other members of my family think, oh yeah, we'll just recycle that.
Yeah.
And when I put the recycling out, I'm like picking that out and throwing it in the garbage, picking that out and throwing it. Because it's stuff that you would think
should be.
That's recyclable.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's mm-hmm not. And I was just sort of on the side of a conversation about things like bread clips.
Oh.
They're too small,
mm-hmm,
to really recycle properly.
Their bread clips now are starting to come out as like a hard cardboard.
Yeah, we got the paper ones. Yeah. 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 Even those,
mm-hmm,
are still, they say, are a bit small to be recycled.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
figured you'd just be throwing it in with all the rest of the paper and stuff, and it would all melt down.
Yeah,
right. Hmm. But yeah, so anyway, hopefully they're able to do this, and once they get people to sign in and join in with it,
yeah,
I think it'll take off.
Yeah, we need to figure out a better way to do it, and
right?
It's such a waste of resources and efforts to just. Yeah. Trash this.
Well,
stuff,
and right? When you got all these outdoor companies trying to get in that environmental mode.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Give us that. We'll make our special whatever clothing or jacket or wick away or something out of this so that they can say, yeah, we got this environmentally friendly, redone, you know, regenerated and all that. So cool.
Hmm.
Do you remember? Oh, 2 years ago, I think now, we talked about the movie The Thief, His Wife, and the Canoe.
I don't think I've ever watched it.
I've not watched it. A film about canoe man, John Darwin, faked his own death and tried to start a new life with a false identity. Well, apparently he did end up starting a new life and he has a new wife down in Thailand or something like that, so... Yeah. So there was a whole thing. He faked his death and then was actually, the kids thought he was dead and everything. And he was living at home with his wife. Everybody, he just stayed hidden.
Yeah.
It's like, okie dokie.
Collected the life insurance and
yeah,
paid off the mortgage. And
yep. Yeah, and then he ended up moving down to an island or something like that. No, sorry, that's what it was. He moved down to that, and then he came home to visit, but no one knew he was coming to visit.
Yeah.
And he was staying quietly with his wife, and then I guess everybody found out. Anyway.
Somebody found inspiration in this story.
Somebody found, it sounds like. On August 12th, a father of three from Wisconsin disappeared, what was thought to have drowned while kayaking. Now authorities believe he staged a kayaking accident and fled to Europe. I remember hearing about this father of three.
Missing?
They were doing this missing kayaking, flipped over, and they haven't found him and all that sort of stuff, right? Because this is when we're sort of talking about the how many accidents, and every time you're Googling stuff, it all comes up with deaths and missing and capsizing and all of that. Ryan Borgwart was reported missing August 12th, last spoken to his wife on August 11th. When investigators responded to a call, they found his car and trailer parked near Dodge Memorial Park. Ryan's last known location was Green Lake. 1 hour later, police discovered a capsized kayak in the lake's western region where the water reaches depths of approximately 220 feet. Next day, Ryan's fishing rod was found by fishermen in Green Lake. Tackle box was also discovered in the same area. Inside, his license, wallet, and keys had been left behind, which to me isn't... Well, my keys I usually keep in my pocket or something, right? My life jacket pocket or something.
But, yeah.
This led a team of divers and search dogs to look for Ryan at Green Lake August 24th. Bruce's Legacy, a volunteer search and recovery organization, simultaneously conducted a 28-day search for him. However,
a lot of effort went into
that's
this.
That's a lot of effort and money. October 7th, shocking evidence came to light that caused investigators to change gears. It was uncovered that Ryan's name had been checked on August 13th by Canadian law enforcement, one day after he supposedly vanished. Dun, dun, dun. That was something we didn't expect, recalls Green Lake County Sheriff Mark Podol. Ryan's wife then provided authorities with a laptop, which police analyzed. They realized that on the day he disappeared, Ryan had replaced the hard drive on his computer and cleared his browsing history.
A little suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Additionally, earlier this year, Ryan had reported his passport missing. On May 22nd, he'd gotten a replacement. According to Podol, Ryan also took pictures of his passport, changed his email, moved money to a foreign bank account. He was reportedly communicating with a woman from Uzbekistan leading up to his disappearance.
Hmm.
In January, Ryan took out a life insurance policy valued at $375,000 and bought airline cards. All of this new evidence has pushed investigators to suspect Ryan is actually alive and someplace in Europe, maybe Uzbekistan, not in Wisconsin's Green Lake. The sheriff thanked Ryan's family, especially his wife, for their assistance, calling her one strong lady during a recent news conference. Whenever we called on her, she always responded and gave us everything she could. I cannot imagine what she's going through and what they're going through. Ryan had three children who, up until this month, believed their father had drowned while kayaking. Following a 54-day search, his kids were informed that he hadn't died.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sheriff Mark Podol issued a message to Ryan on Friday, November 8th, urging him to reach out. Ryan, if you're viewing this, I plead you to contact us or contact your family. We understand things can happen, but there's a family that wants their daddy back.
He could have done a better job of covering his tracks.
You think?
Hmm.
You think?
Like, the hard drive thing is a glaring omission. Like, they scanned his passport as he crossed the border into Canada.
How did he not think that would...
I know. Like, it's going to be recorded.
Right?
Everything gets recorded these days. And so this was just last August, recently. And so
it was this year.
Yeah. But it's on the outside, though. On the outside, looking in, it's like, oh, yeah, it looks like he capsized. His kayak is there. His fishing gear is there.
And if they didn't go any farther...
Yeah. Yeah, if they hadn't tied the bits together and realized that his passport was scanned at the border.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, he could have done better.
Yeah, this was just 3 months ago he crossed into Canada.
Yeah.
Hmm. So I guess maybe he just did take some inspiration from
the book.
Thief, his wife, and the canoe.
Yeah.
makes you wonder how many other people have done this.
Well, yeah, and I imagine back in the day it would have been a lot easier before all of the technology, video.
Stroll across the border with a big bag of cash.
Yeah, you can't do anything.
Sneak across the border.
All the fun stuff you can't do anymore.
Yeah, why would you... Well, I guess realistically you would have to cross the border legally because it's not like you could get on a plane to Uzbekistan from Canada if you've crossed into Canada without checking your passport.
They wouldn't even know. I don't think there would be... You go buy tickets and jump on a plane. You'd cross the border middle of the night through the woods and then go to an airport where you already have tickets purchased. It's not like anybody's going to think...
But you got to check your passport if you're going into Europe from Canada or something.
Yeah, at the airport. They'll check it again.
So...
But they will glance at it. It doesn't get scanned. You get scanned at a border crossing, but not at the airport.
Do they not scan it at the airport?
No, I don't think so. Like, it's been a while since I did an international flight, though.
Usually I just hide in the wheel wells and end up wherever I end up.
So I can remember coming in years ago, and the guy just, you hand him your passport. He looks at it, looks at the photo, looks at you, makes sure it matches, and then he'll...
I'm pretty sure when we went to Iceland, they had a little scanner thingy that they held it up to.
Hmm. Anyway.
Maybe they don't scan yours because your ugly face is going to break
the machine.
It was
also a long time ago. It was like...
It was a long time
ago. Last time I flew internationally was 2009.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Things have updated since then.
Yeah. I've crossed the border by vehicle, but I've not flown between countries since 2009.
Yeah. I've been a few times. I'm pretty sure they scanned my passport.
I'll pay attention if it ever happens, if I ever travel again. Hmm. Oh, yeah. Maybe in June.
Maybe we're driving.
Are we?
Oh, heck yes. I'm driving to we're going to make stops on the way back too.
Yeah. Barbecue places.
Barbecue places, donut shops, you name it.
It's going to be a stinky vehicle.
Oh, that's why we have four windows that open.
Yeah. Is your air conditioning fixed?
Oh, yeah. It's been fixed for ages.
Okay.
Yeah.
Texas is hot.
Not when you drive really, really fast with the windows open.
People are wondering, what are they talking about? Because we haven't said it. Think about this.
Yeah, because nothing's
this
really
has
been...
never been mentioned.
Nothing's been 100%ed either.
No. And I'm still not convinced it's going to happen.
I am. With or without you. Dun, dun, dun. If you're that scared, you can come as a support guy.
I could do that. Texas is hot. Oh, I was watching
South Africa.
So I was watching videos of somebody catching garfish. They're like little alligators.
We can get those up here. We get the gar pike.
Not like down there. Holy cow! This thing had he lifted the garfish, and it jumped with the hook in its mouth, and it ended up clamping onto his rib cage. It's like,
Hey, you got something to tell the grandkids. There was this time we was racing.
I got the fish, and the fish bit me.
That'll learn you. It's the gators you got to be wearing.
Two ribs.
The gators and the stingrays.
Yes, yes.
Anyway.
Yes. Let's talk about Peter Frank.
So Peter Frank, we had him on episode 445.
Yes.
He's doing the Great Loop. He's paddling it.
He's quite
he's
a ways
some
along.
Good distance,
he
is. He's down in Annapolis, Maryland right now.
Slow but steady.
It's been a few windy and cold.
Yeah.
So he's had some delays, like windbound days and stuff. But he's still chugging along, which is really cool to hear.
And he should be able to make it far enough south by winter that he's probably not going to be stopped.
Yeah. That's what we're thinking. Because that was our big thing. Is he going to make it far enough on time?
Yeah.
And he is, right? He's doing the intercoastal right now. Lately, he's been in a couple magazine articles and a bunch of other media. And it looks like he's having a great time. He's meeting a lot of great people. Everybody he's meeting.
I've seen a lot of articles about him popping up.
Yep.
Here and there and everywhere.
Yeah, and if you go to Peter's Voyage on Facebook, you're seeing all the photos and stuff. And
yeah.
Like he's stopping at I think it was a yacht club or something like that, and they're. You know, hey, come on, you know, we got a place for you to stay. You need some food and stuff like that. We'll take you around because you're not getting out on the water because the, you know, winds and waves.
Yeah,
so you might as well spend a couple of days here and we'll look after you. And he's meeting a lot of people. Everybody that does something like this, we've heard the 99.9% of
there's a lot of generosity out there.
A lot of it. Go to whereispeterfrank.com. That's his website. I believe there's links to his social media.
You go to his website and there's links to Instagram Facebook. And Facebook and all kinds of stuff.
So he's having a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of jealous. Living vicariously through him.
He's been paddling since June.
Right? June, July, August, September, October. Yeah, so this is the sixth month.
Yeah,
that he's been paddling.
Oy vey.
That's awesome.
And you can support him.
Yeah.
By buying him a meal, and so on his website, it's there's some people go, hey, buy us a beer, and you're not really buying them a beer, but you're giving them a token amount for the value of a beer, and if enough people support with that $5, and well, he's doing buy me a chicken, so it's basically one of those chickens that you buy at the grocery store, and the little.
We eat so many of those.
Yeah, we do too. But yeah, so it's like, what, $8.75 or whatever, the something standard like price across at Costco's across the U.S. And so buy him a chicken and it'll support his journey.
Right? Yeah, so you're buying him, helping along, buying some food and stuff like that. And I did notice that, because he's still wearing his pirate type gear, right?
He is. But now
he's got a fuzzy hat on now to keep his head warm.
Yeah.
He's got a puffy jacket on to keep himself warm. I mean, right?
Yeah.
So he's still chugging along, which is really great to see. So we'll keep on following him and wait till he...
As he finishes his journey, he's a third of the way
through? I would say he's
through?
At least a third of the way
at
now.
At least a third of the way through.
Yeah, because he's got to go still continue down
all the way to Florida around, cross over,
and then start heading back up.
Up the Mississippi, I believe, he's coming up. Yeah.
M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I-M. I-M-I-P-P-I-M.
That's going to be hard to paddle against the flow of the Mississippi.
I would think so. I would take a flight home and then launch from home and head down the Mississippi.
Yeah, go down river.
But no, he's doing it totally the other way, so we'll see. I mean, he's not in a hurry, so.
Nope.
Right?
He does have a schedule to keep up.
As long as he's, spring's happening by the time he's heading up to the cooler climbs.
Yes.
Right? Then he should be good.
Yeah. He said he's willing to stop and he'll get a work at a yacht club or its warehouse or something to progress his trip.
So far, he hasn't had to do that.
Nope. Exactly.
Nope. Yeah. So,
a lot of generous people out there helping them out.
There is, and it's really good to see.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's... Is that all I've got?
That's all I got.
That's all I've got this week.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else coming up?
I keep forgetting to look at the calendars and see, because we keep missing stuff. There's so many things. It's like, oh, we could have talked about this and that.
But, well, there's big. Well, there's always. It seems to be
all the outdoor shows start January, February.
Yeah, but there's still racing going on different spots
there
in
is.
The world.
Yeah,
paddle racing and stuff. And
Athena's being needy again.
She's being needy. It's like, come on, guys, wrap it up. She's staring
go.
At the door.
She's at the studio door.
Right. Yeah, you're going to have to wait. Hi. Yeah. Do you got anything to say? No. Okay. You sure? Can you howl? No, she's just getting excited now.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah, you've activated her.
I've activated the dog. Yeah, give us a second. All right. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at Paddling Adventures Radio, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share them with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.